We will begin with comments from the public. Do we have any? We have comments.
This last year I've been hearing bits of...
Could you tell us your name, please?
No.
Yeah. John Conrath. I'm from Swim.
Hi, John.
Yeah, sorry about that.
This last year I've been getting bits and pieces of information. Term contract that is apparently going to be negotiated or it's under negotiation. And I've got at least a few straight questions about it, simple questions, and they go into a great, much greater depth, but I don't think we have time for that here. What I did is I did a search on the PUD and any of the meetings that referenced the long-term contract, and there were quite a few of them. I was surprised. Can't hear?
A little louder, it'd be better. It may be on. It's just green light.
I got the green light. So I did the search and found. Okay, I found quite a few meetings where the subject was brought up. But when I went through the notes on those meetings, I found that there was really very little information on the nitty-gritty of what this contract is. You know, for example, I found in addition to the 20-year term, what are we agreeing to in that contract? You know, what is our obligation to that contract?
During the contract, there are rate periods every 2 to 3 or 4 years. So what we're agreeing to is to taking power from the Bonneville Power Administration for a 20-year period.
And if we don't need that power?
Well, it's a we're not signing up for a certain level. We're signing up for net requirements. So in other words, we take our load consumption, subtract what resources we have, that leaves over our net requirements. So it's not like a set megawatt level. It's just that we're going to buy our power other than any other resources that we have from the Bonneville Power Administration.
So just what we need?
Just what we need. And right now, Bonneville Power is about 50 to 70% cheaper than anybody else on the market.
Okay. And where in the contract would it say that?
Would it say that we only are buying our net requirements?
Yeah, I didn't see it.
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's not that you're going out and buying a set megawatt level. It's that you're buying your net requirements. That means you take whatever resources you have and you only pay that by that amount.
Okay. So... That's our obligation to them is to buy power if we need it.
Yes, sir.
Right? Okay. The 20-year contract, when I saw that, that's what really brought me in here. I don't see how that possibly could be a good thing for the PUD. I mean,
it's a very good thing for the PUD.
Can I finish, please?
You
should. Okay. Yeah, we are living in a very unsettled times, you know, climate change, we've got potential catastrophes here, we are living at the end of the power line, we have a lot of extra risk here that I don't know how, you know, we can commit ourselves to something for 20 years and we don't know what's coming up. What technology are we going to be using in 5 years? You know, maybe we know that. 10 years, I don't think so. Okay, and then the last question, I guess, is what would be the consequences of us not signing that contract?
Well, I'll start out by addressing that. We have passed CETA, the Climate Clean Energy Transformation Act. That act is taking out all the thermal generation coming into the state of Washington. Thermal generation right now makes up about 40% of the resource stack for the Pacific Northwest. You take out thermal generation, what do you think are going to happen to prices? I'm asking you, what do you think, John?
I don't know because okay. I don't know what's going to happen.
Well, if you had 100 cows that were making milk and 40 of them died,
what do you think is going to happen to the price of milk? I get that, but I don't know where the technology is going. I don't know where our demand is going to be. You know, if we
net requirement contract, we only pay for what we need.
Okay. Well, I was not clear on that. So there would be no consequences except what?
No consequences.
Well, if we did not sign the contract.
Oh, well, then if we didn't sign the contract, then when you flipped your light switch, the lights probably wouldn't go on.
Now, that's just real conjecture, right?
Well, I mean, either we buy it from Bonneville or we develop our own resources.
Well, their mandate is to supply the whole area with electricity. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they could not supply us with energy.
Yeah,
maybe it costs more. Yeah, maybe possibly. But that's what their job is. I don't see how they would. No, we're not going to supply you with energy. This
you
area
don't
is
sign
black
a contract. Do you expect them to still provide you with energy?
Well, maybe at a higher cost.
Rick, may I make a suggestion here? I think we're in a debate of policy and. As opposed to letting the comment stand for the public and so forth, and I suggest he makes his comment and let the staff work this because I hear things that I don't necessarily agree with. But
you didn't jump in.
It's not what the public comment period is for. This is not on the agenda. We're okay. Richard.
Richard DeBusman, right here.
The Packers lost. Still doesn't make me
not support them. So I'm here today to go on record not supporting a 20-year contract with BPA, but rather looking at a shorter-term contract because of what John just said with we don't know what's coming down the road. And I would like to support that with
something I took off the internet yesterday. Administration. Sir.
So the rate of change in battery technology is phenomenal. There's hardly a day you can pick up the newspaper or something on the internet that there isn't something to say, wow, look what's coming. This article, which I copied the first four pages of, it was a 17-page article, indicates that flow batteries are coming extremely rapidly. And we're talking about large-scale battery technology. The city of Sacramento right now is making a contract with it. Company in Portland to put in a flow battery that will support 60,000 homes through the night hours and into the peak hour period. So I suggest to you that if you look at this article, it refers to that, refers to the military saying we've got to have our bases energy independent. So big bucks are going into research on batteries. Not long ago, Tony Seba said, battery technology is changing at such a rate, it's just going to boggle your minds. So 4 years ago, I bought this little razor, rechargeable. This thing stores energy. I charged it 4 months ago. It still has 80% of its charge. Okay, I don't use it very much. I know what you're thinking, Rick. I don't use it very much. But the point is, energy storage is becoming a really big thing. And I worry about this contract. Does it limit us to local sources of energy, how much we can produce locally and not get crosswise with BPA on that? Okay? Okay, my final comment is this author, Kamal, has been studying glaciers around the world, and he's measuring the rate of change. And again, it's phenomenal. And that ice which is left is getting soft. So the expectation of climate change is something that we probably don't have a good grasp of. So will BPA be able to support us with all the energy we need 20 years from now, 5 years from now? We don't know that. We don't know how much water is going to be coming down that Columbia River Basin. So my point is, wouldn't a shorter contract be a better idea? I'm for signing that contract. Okay. But wouldn't a shorter contract be a better idea so we have flexibility to bring in other sources, especially if seasonal storage, as suggested in this article, becomes a reality. So those of us who produce energy in the summer could actually retrieve it in the winter. So these kinds of concepts are coming, and are coming rapidly. So I would urge you to take a good look at it. Thanks.
Reed, and I would just like to make a comment or a suggestion that because this is of such interest to a lot of us, and there seems to be a lot of misgivings and misunderstandings and whatever, could we not have the PUD put on some evening programs where we can sit and actually discuss this and have people bring their concerns to the table and have the concerns answered, and so people can become more comfortable with the subject of the 20-year contract and understand that there are nuances, there are flavors, there are that it's just not a one-and-done thing, that we have flexibility. Would that be possible, Sean?
I guess my only comment would be that it's not that our PUD is negotiating the contract individually. It's the entire BPA customer base.
No, I understand that, and that's what I think people need to understand. I'm just saying that there's some of us have different levels of understanding, so we all need to sort of be on the same page if we're going to buy the same car. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was just my suggestion.
Yeah.
Because we did this back when 5G was an issue, not that PUD had anything to do with 5G, but there was such concern in the communities about 5G that we all got together and let everybody voice their issue, and then there seemed to have been some kind of a conclusion to it after a couple of meetings. You know, not everybody walked away with a smile, but hey, life.
Yeah. Right.
But just a suggestion. Thank you.
Sure. I agree with the last speaker. Excuse me. Before you start, I think it'd be worthwhile to have a special work session. I have some concerns about the long-term contract. I have some questions about our obligation to negotiate with all the other PE customers and how that benefits us specifically in Trump. So it'd be nice to be able to have some presentation from staff on the technology, on the implications of the long-term contract, what some of the potential negatives or positives might be from that. So I would appreciate having a special meeting to address and focus on the next long-term contract, how it impacts rate payers and final accounting.
David Mallon from Carlsberg. I second the idea of having an educational meeting that will provide clarity and a possibility for discussion. Apart from that, my only comment is I attended a meeting here via Zoom a couple of months ago, and the people were talking from the audience, could not be heard, and the Zoom video itself did not come on my computer until the end of the meeting. Bingo! Suddenly it comes on. So I don't know what the problem was in terms of the connection. I didn't do anything to my computer to make it show up during the meeting, but it did not show up during the meeting. I just listened to the audio. And the problem with that was that there was a lot of discussion from developers and real estate people and all kinds of folks who wanted more deeper wells dug and things like that. I couldn't see who the heck it was talking, and people were talking from the audience without coming to the microphone. So it could not be heard in the audio transmission of the Zoom meeting. So the only request I have is if somebody's talking and decides to comment from the audience, instruct them to come up here so that it can be heard by people who are Zooming in, because there are people on Zoom right now who can't hear if somebody is making a comment from the audience. Thank you.
Any other comments from the public? Okay, do we have any agenda revisions?
We do. We handed out a new revision to you today. It's item E on the consent agenda. Removal of invoices from the active miscellaneous account receivable amount of $35,874.89. That is an add, but it's in the board packet. So it just was left off the agenda itself.
Okay. Any other revisions?
None for me.
Okay. Do we have a motion for the consent agenda or any discussion?
I'm good with it.
Yeah, I'll move we approve the consent agenda.
I'll second this.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Yeah.
Opposed? Okay. I think we're ready for the election of board officers.
Yeah, so what we need to do here, this is something that we do every 2 years, and what we'll have you guys do is somebody make a motion for a president. We'll take a vote, a motion for a vice president, take a vote, a motion for a secretary, and take a vote. And then if you want to change chairs to coordinate with the new position, we can take a pause and do that. So we need a motion for a president first.
I move that Ken Hayes be made president. Do I have a second?
Make a separate motion. I move we elect Commissioner Waddell as president of the board.
Well, I'll second that addendum. Change motion.
All right, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor or any discussion?
A.
And all those opposed? A. So we have a new president. Do we want to take a break or just move seats?
We need to do the vice president and secretary, too.
Okay. Do we have a motion for the vice president?
Yeah, I move that Ken Hayes be the vice president.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Aye.
Okay, so how about a treasurer?
A secretary.
Or secretary, sorry. Do we have a candidate for treasurer or secretary?
I'll move we elect Commissioner Pascal as secretary of the board.
I second that.
Okay, we have a first and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
Aye.
Okay.
So if you guys want to take a brief pause and change seats, or we can continue the meeting as is with the new positions, up to you.
Yeah, let's change seats now. Yes.
Stuck in the middle. the next item I would just like to is the new president of the board say a few things. You know, we've heard a lot of great comments from the public and need to continue to hear that and so forth. And one of my jobs is the president is to facilitate as best I can a fair and open process that follows all the rules that we're required to by state governance and so forth, and ensure that we procedurally are correct in what we do so it doesn't stand any kind of – it can withstand challenges if we're, you know, on the decisions we make and so forth. I also just an observation about the future. We, you know, in terms of procedures, given the complexity of the future we face, and you've heard some of that already, we've heard it for years, we're all personally familiar with one issue after another that affects the ability of a PUD to deliver energy at the best and reasonable price. This is going to be a major challenge over the, over over the next 20, well, I'll just use that 20-year period since it's a contract, but even if we have a 20-year contract signed, we're going to be living in a world we're going to be facing some very unusual energy issues, notwithstanding the 20-year contract. And so procedurally, what I want to make sure is that since I – and these comments are not policy-directed in any way – but simply that our procedures and processes and so forth among the public, the staff, and the commissioners is facilitates a wholesome effort to understand and do the best we can to bring the best and the cheapest power, the most resilient power to the customers. So that's just what I see my job is to try to do. And that goes from everything to making sure you guys can hear me or we can hear you and that the technology is there to support it. And if it's not, we want to make sure that, that's working. And, you know, and so like today we had a, we've already had a, I think a good exchange and I agree with the idea of workshops. And I certainly would want to, we've had those in the past and I think, it's certainly due a workshop on the 2028 contracts and what they all might mean. And so it sounds like there may be some consensus. I don't know. Rick, you have, should we do a have a workshop, public workshop?
Or, sure.
Okay. I think you suggested it too, Ken. So that's one item that we could, you know, let's get plugged in to staff to start working and get on the agenda. And of course, I should certainly want to recognize our new commissioner, Ken Hayes here, and welcome him to the PUD. You know, he brings a lot of valued experience and so forth that we can certainly benefit from. I'm just listening to him talk for over the last year. I'm very impressed with what he can do and bring to this party. And Ken, you want to say say something, or you know?
Well, I'm looking forward to being part of the organization, and I'm going to work hard. I've already dove in to the deep end and trying to sort through all the material that's been provided to me, both from the commissioner and the leadership side, as well as just being an employee of the PUD. I look forward to working with my fellow commissioners and staff, and I like to think I'm a team player, and looking forward to all the challenges and opportunities that we face.
Okay, thanks.
Can you come up to the podium?
Presentation or any kind of a public announcement about that. We all were waiting to come and listen to your, you take your pledge.
Well, I can't answer the question about notification, but the specific answer to your question was on December 30th.
Thank you. Just curious.
And I'm not certain that that would be something that would be normally noticed.
We've never done that in the past.
I mean, it was pretty special for me, but I don't think it was that.
Not like the governor. Okay. Well, then moving on with the business items,
We'll move to the 2023 committee and organization memberships. Sean, you can take that one.
Yeah, so in your board packet is the 2023 committee organization memberships, and staff made some recommended changes based on a commissioner change and just some internal staffing changes. And so the one before you includes staff recommendation with those changes. However, it's up to the commissioners to decide if that is appropriate. So you all can approve it as presented, or if we have any changes, you can notate those, and if you agree, we can adopt record those in the minutes and adopt it as presented with the changes.
Okay, so any discussion here, commissioners?
I have some thoughts or some, I guess, requests. I would like to be the representative for the Energy Northwest position. My predecessor sat on that board and executive board for a long time, and I think the fact that I've been elected to replace him would provide meaning to have me continue on in that representation. I guess I'm also curious about a number of these committees or organizations being represented by staff versus the policymakers. I'm not sure if that's because of a lack of interest in the policymakers or commissioners, or you know what the logic behind that is. But for example, the North Olympic Legislative Alliance, it seems like that should be, at least the primary delegate should be one of the elected officials. West Open Access Network, I certainly see the value in having the PD subject matter expert, but I think it's also a policy-focused organization that I certainly have interest in, like to be part of. I see that I've been assigned to the Stungeness Chamber of Commerce, which I'm fine with. So I guess I'd be interested in the NOAA-NET being at least one of the delegates. I mean, it would be nice to attend that with one of the PUD subject matter experts. And the last one here was I am a subject matter expert on the North Peninsula Building Association, and I certainly appreciate Ms. Hartman's work there, but I would also like to be able to participate in it. So those are my questions.
Okay. Are we, commissioners, good with having Ken as the change? Sean, you tell me if some of these positions or have technical reasons why that person has to be staff or has to be a commissioner or can't be a commissioner or something. But Energy Northwest with Ken there, can he be the board of directors delegate?
Yeah, there would be nothing that would preclude him from being the delegate.
Okay. Put Ken there. And then under the North Olympic Legislative Alliance, did you want to participate or lead? Or?
Well, I would be interested in leading that.
Okay. Can we make him the delegate and Nicole the alternate?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then on the Energy Northwest, put me as the alternate then.
All right. And then NOAA-NET, how about that? Is that a...
I don't know the answer on that one. It's always been a technical staff person, to my knowledge. So I'm not 100% sure, but we can put Ken as the director on that.
Is it possible to at least attend the meetings and participate and be able to hear?
Yeah, you can attend all the meetings.
Any of us can go to any of these meetings.
I'm fine with that, actually.
Okay.
But I just have high interest in...
so you're okay leaving it as is, just attend the meetings?
That would be fine.
Okay.
All right. Did I miss anything from you, Ken? That's covered. Rick, do you have any comments?
None.
Okay. Then
we need a motion to approve this new membership agenda. So I hear a motion to accept the member agenda with the changes we've just annotated here.
Yes, I'll move to approve the membership, the committee and organization memberships.
Second. Okay. All those in favor, vote say
aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, so it's approved that the that's our new.
And I'll send out a new updated one after the meeting.
Okay, thank you.
I could just add a comment, Sean, regarding Energy Northwest. I would be happy if you would like to attend the meeting or Tuesday.
Yeah, we can talk offline about that. I would appreciate to go to the meetings too.
Yeah, and I probably will want to go to at least the Northwest Public Power Association. Just not, I don't need to be identified anyway, but I, you know, I'll next leave it up to you if you see a meeting that looks like it has a good agenda and I could, you know, it doesn't too far away. Maybe I can go.
Yeah. A lot of theirs are down in Vancouver.
In Vancouver?
Yeah.
Good. Okay. So the next item is the, I guess we have a presentation by the Economic Development Council and Community Development presentation by Colleen McAleer and Bruce Emery.
Thank you very much, Commission. Sean, can you pull up the slides?
Yeah.
EDC. Thank you so much. Okay. Great. So, first off, I am Colleen McAleer, the Executive Director of the Clallam County Economic Development Council. And let's see, did I think? Okay. I wanted to make a few introductions and also thank you for having us join you today. I've brought with me two colleagues. The first is Bruce Emery, the Director of Community Development for Clallam County. He's an elected official and he has some slides that he will be sharing today after I go through my slides. And then also Jeff James, who's the Executive Director of the Port of Port Angeles. He's standing here behind me, and he just wanted to share a few words after Bruce and I speak. So I wanted to start with saying thank you. Thank you to the PUD staff. They created this reserve power capacity map, which is on the PUD site. We have worked with a lot of different businesses that are considering location to Washington State based on our low power rates. And, you know, when we talk to a company, we have to, when they're looking at a lot of different locations, we have to make it as easy as possible for them. And this was just an incredibly helpful resource that the PUD staff provided, which didn't exist before. So huge thank you for that work that was done, the ArcGIS map that anyone in the public can now access. But as I'm sure you are aware, companies need more than just power. There's a lot more to it than that. And part of that is zoning, which is why Bruce is here, but then also water, sewer, and broadband. So we definitely have a need for higher wage jobs. Our county, Clallam County EDC, conducted an analysis, and we are defined by both federal and state standards economically distressed. So we are one of half a dozen counties in Washington State that are economically distressed. And then also we conducted a community survey at grocery stores. I'll go into that a little bit further, but we were trying to find out in a very scientific, unbiased way what the community thought. And the outcome there is that all the top concerns identified all were economic related. And as you all know, everyone knows we need more housing. That's not unique to Clallam County, but certainly that's the case here. And in coming decades, as you know better than anyone, we'll need more renewable energy and energy resources as required by state mandates. And then also, we are looking to identify future locations for targeted economic growth supporting these high-wage jobs. So I've got an example here, but the State Department of Commerce monthly sends out what they call hot lists, and to each of the ADOs in each county, so we're the Associate Development Organization, the Identified Economic Development Organization, which is identified by the county and the state for Clallam County, and we have been since 1982. And so they send us their site selector leads, and there is over 100 that are sent out annually. The last time I checked, last bullet there, we were only competitive for 2 out of 64 that were currently being competed for. And they are leads for renewable energy companies and innovative high-tech companies that have very often high power needs, but not always. And they also are companies that pay really well and frequently have a large number of jobs associated with them and have a significant amount of capital investment included, which means sales tax for a city or county through the building process. Frequently, we're not competitive for these. Like I said, 2 out of 64 at my last count. And that is primarily because we don't have rail. We're not going to do anything about that. We don't have natural gas. Nothing we can do there. But as far as infrastructure requirements, power, sewer, and water, there is potentially some flexibility where we could work together to be more competitive in some areas. Another issue that's a big item that prevents us from being competitive is these businesses traditionally typically want a lot of acreage. So that is contiguous and, you know, 100 acres is an example. And we have one location in our county that Bruce will review that's 160 acres, but it is in Forks. And very often those companies want to be near a larger population, or they want to be closer to the I-5 corridor, or they want to be closer to an airport or a deep water port. So this is the example of something that I receive, like I said, on the monthly basis. Commerce refers to these as project names to ensure that there's no unintentional disclosure of the company that's looking, but you can see examples of the number of jobs and the kind of investment. I deleted all the ones that required rail, natural gas, or an excessive amount of water where we could not compete, but frequently in the top one and the one about Midway that's highlighted in green are ones that we submitted proposals for, but those were the 2 of the 64. The others either required a lot of acreage. You know, you see there 200 acres or even 50. We can't pull together 50 acres other than the Fork site. But, again, the owner of the property has to be willing to sell, and that's an issue as well. So I believe Jeff James will review some of the limitations the port has at our airports. People often think, well, we've got a lot of industrial land there. Why don't you just do it there? But he'll go over that. A little bit more about our surveying and economic plan. We really tried to make it science-based and realistic. We hired a PhD economist to help us through this process and an expert technician that does Qualtrics surveying. We interviewed 508 people from the community, like I said, in grocery stores. So it wasn't my friend who maybe thinks the same way I do to try to get a really good idea of what the community's thinking. We also had over 300 businesses surveyed, and we put those into different clusters. We didn't use the North American Industry Classification System because that system doesn't work well for the type of industries we have in our county. And we asked them about the number of employees, median wages, total revenues, supply chain growth potential. And then we worked on analyzing what a target wage should be. We have minimal resources and staffing and time, of course, so we want to make sure our work is very targeted. And we chose to look at a family of three with two adults working and one child. So, and we also assumed that that one adult made the median wage of private industry in our county, which is $37,000, not the average wage. Average is a bit higher. And if you include government, the wages go up dramatically. But we were looking at private industry, and then we didn't use what's called a living wage. The living wage is the threshold requirement for paying all your bills, but you're never saving any money for retirement or a rainy day fund or college or saving for a down payment or anything like that. And we elected to include 15% of the breadwinner's wage going towards those kind of, we felt, fairly reasonable savings.
Colin?
Yes.
Analyzing the target wage there, is that for Clallam County?
That's for Clallam County only.
And what does it say in that last sentence?
It says healthcare, manufacturing / maritime, and timber and construction. Okay. Construction didn't meet all the requirements, however, that we created to for these industry sectors for us to pursue. However, because housing is such a big deal in our county, we included construction in there. It just
is there a dollar amount with that third bullet that's hidden there?
No. Oh, there's not. No.
Okay.
So some long-term solutions in order for us to be competitive. Ideally, we'll expand areas that allow heavy industrial uses with large acreage so that we can serve not only energy producers, but also companies that do use a lot of energy. I can give you a few examples of companies that we pursued last year that we weren't selected. One was Mino Carbon. They are a biochar company. We didn't have 60 acres. Contiguous acres that's zoned heavy industrial. They wanted to locate here, but we could not support their needs. And there are, 10, 15 acres here and there, but it's not contiguous acreage. Another one was called the Diamond Foundry, and they produce chips for the micro circuit board industry, and they needed more power than what we could provide. And so they chose Wenatchee, which, of course, is served by one of the county's PUDs that own their own dams. Yes.
What kind of luck have you had matching up some of these requests here, for their utility or companies that want to come in, they need 50K or whatever power, and finding somebody that's willing to develop the power for them and put the two together, and so that the net doesn't exceed something that we have to go to Bonneville for, mm-hmm. or something like that?
So on the list that we had, we it's all these little pieces and parts. And so 50 kilowatt K, for example, there's very few locations that have that. Sometimes they want an existing building. And, you know, if it's – we do have a 100,000-square-foot building at the port, but it's often not a great fit. And have we – we have pursued a few, and one, we were looking at expanding the power. I can let Jeff talk about that. But it just – because that particular issue was the new large single load, there wasn't an opportunity to we couldn't be competitive because of that NLSL that doubles the rate. So I think there are entities out there that are very interested, but we haven't gotten that far.
With respect to the new large single load, you know, any other public utility would have that as well. And I think if you went to Puget, they would have a similar. So it's hard for me to believe that the new large single load issue with Bonneville would affect Clallam County and not other public entities as well.
Absolutely, Commissioner Pascal. That's why if you look, you know, if you're wondering why is Moses Lake growing like crazy and Wenatchee, you know, in comparison to our area, it's just because of that, because they own their own dams, so they're not restricted by the NLSL. That was something new for me. I'd never heard of this thing when they approached us. I guess that was last year, and, you know, learned the hard way after numerous meetings that, oh, this is going nowhere because of that. But so understanding what we can deliver and working together is really of value. So at least, you know, we know who we can market to, and working together for a full array of services, including infrastructure and workforce and other things like that. So ideally, we'd like to create plans and assess costs for certain sites. We'd like to have ready sites for businesses that express interest. And the state has so many different interested parties that are coming to Washington State because of the low cost of power and because our hydropower is green. But if we're not ready to respond to them, then we won't, you know, we won't be selected and we won't get those high-wage jobs that are being offered. And also love to see a pursuit of federal grants in partnership with other public bodies, both public and private. And again, these are long-term solutions. Understand, you know, this stuff takes a lot of time. But we'd like to be a part of that with Clallam PUD if you're so interested. We appreciate you, your staff, being engaged with NODC on their 2022 Energy Futures Conference. I know Karen Affeld did a lot of work regarding that, and your staff provided some excellent technical information. We'd really love to see that when she has those outcomes ready for the Clallam PUD to engage fully there and understand what potential next steps are. She should have that, she said, completed in February.
February. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm waiting.
Yeah. So wanted to thank you for your continued engagement with the EDC. Your staff has been exceptional with their responsiveness as we pursue lucrative leads throughout the county. And thanks so much for the ArcGIS map to help plan, respond to opportunities, and market our existing industrial properties. And we really appreciate their engagement and expertise in the Energy Futures Conference that I anticipate there will be follow-up events towards that. And that, of course, was led by NODC, two-county organization, and then also Pacific Northwest National Labs. And thank you for allowing your general manager to serve on our 2023 executive committee with his expertise, of course. And I do have a formal request that you consider contracting with the EDC at the $25,000 level in 2023 is proposed and budgeted. And we do have a lot of growth that we've experienced over the last few years. We have a lot of federal contracts now that require match, and we've taken our budget. When I came on board in 2019, it was about $250,000, and now we're about $800,000. But again, a lot of these programs require match. So your support is critical to our community, and I just wanted to highlight some of our important partners that are partners and members of the Clallam County EDC. So with that, I will hand it over to Bruce Emery, our elected Director of Community Development. Thank you.
Good afternoon, and thanks for having us today. This is a great opportunity. And as Colleen had mentioned, we have needs in Clallam County when it comes to industrial zoning, industrial areas suitable to house and to attract family wage jobs. About a month ago, I had a meeting with the SQIM Realtors Association, and the first thing I said was I asked a question. What did they think was the most pressing issue, the biggest problem that we in Clallam County face? And what they came up with was affordable, attainable housing. And part and parcel with that, along the affordable aspect, is the fact that in Clallam County we have a pretty big margin between mean family income and the median house price. And many people simply don't qualify, in part because they don't have the employment, they don't have the revenue, the income to be able to afford it. So family wage jobs is a big part of what we want to try to accomplish with our land use array. This map here shows the current distribution of industrial zones in unincorporated Clallam County. Area 1 is the area east of Port Angeles. It's immediately north of the Eclipse Industrial Park, which is currently in city limits. My understanding is that the Eclipse Industrial Park is in large part already fully developed. The use is there. People have pretty much committed. So the capacity to expand or to house new businesses simply doesn't exist there. Item number 2 is the area, basically it's around the prison out at Clallam Bay. This one's kind of a head-scratcher, and I'll get to it in a little bit, but it includes a large area of commercial forest land, most of which is either owned by the DNR or in part by Green Crow Timber or by the Ring Family Partnership. They are affiliated with the urban growth area out there in Clallam Bay, but they don't have urban services. So not only that, they're also in the resource land tax base for commercial forestry. So they enjoy a great tax benefit. If they were to pull it out and convert it to another use, they would owe a pretty substantial 7-year back tax for those properties. So they create kind of a disincentive. Area 3, of course, is our Carlsberg Industrial Park down the road here, and that one is a very interesting area simply because it's actually an unincorporated urban growth area. It remains under the purview of Clallam County, and PUD is definitely partners in some of the urban services, as I understand it. The water issue, which I know you are all very familiar with. Area 4 is the... this is an area out on Miller Peninsula, and it's a Pacific Aerospace and Electronics outfit out there. That's their bonded metals division where they do explosive metallurgy. And it's a single parcel. It's limited in its scope, and certainly under the rules of the Growth Management Act, I think it's, we'd be hard-pressed to consider that a likely candidate for expansion. That and the fact that the state has decided to make the majority of the Miller Peninsula a recreational park, a recreational destination park. Lastly, 5 is an area immediately north of the city of Forks that also is in commercial forest designation, but it's about 157 acres that is currently zoned industrial. The heavy industrial zone M is the way it appears on our zoning map. So let's see if I can get this right. There we go. Okay, this is the immediate area to the west of the city of Port Angeles, and it's Highway 101 that forms the southern boundary along the purple zoning designation. The purple, for the most part, is zoned just heavy industrial. But in this area, we have already a lot of committed uses. The portions, I kind of wish we had done color coding here, but the portions with the smaller dots are actually the vacant lots. Right now, this entire area has about 189.6 acres, and out of that, 158 of it is zoned heavy industrial. About 31 is in that red area, a little bit to the west. That is an interesting zone. They've named it Urban Reserve Industrial, and the reason they set it up that way is because right now there are no urban services there to support heavy industrial use. The irony is they're really limited on urban services in that entire area. There is no sewer and water service right now. To the areas in purple is provided by Dry Creek Water Association, which is limited on the number of shares that they're able to allocate. So to support true heavy industry, it's pretty questionable. The large polygon there off of Airport Road, that's about the biggest parcel. It's just over 30 acres, and that, I believe, is the Angeles concrete plant, which is basically sand and gravel and similar uses. So not a whole lot of water usage, not a whole lot of electrical usage. Pretty much that's what you have in that entire area, are either commercial or light industrial. Yes, sir.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. Is this in the city of Port Angeles?
This is unincorporated. The city is to the north and to the south. There's a large residential area, polygon, immediately to the east of Airport Road. None of that area is within the city limits. But to me, you know, when you look to the north and you see the gray area, including the airport and so forth, and to the south, including the Eclipse Industrial Park, I think this would be a shoo-in for urban growth area designation. But that process remains to be seen.
But who serves the area? Is it the PUD or the city?
Right now, only Dry Creek Water Association.
So no electricity?
No, there's electricity. That would be PUD.
Okay.
From what I understand.
Yeah. It is PUD, sir.
Yeah, yeah. That's correct. That's correct. So in this area, in fact, let's just go to the summary here. Now, this can be a little bit misleading. For example, they say there's 3.54 acres in resource land use. That actually belongs to the manufacturing commercial, because that's really a pot grow operation. But what's critical here is we've got 63.41 undeveloped acres. That's it. And out of that, and I need to get back to my notes here, so I'm speaking from what I've discovered. 32.36 of that is the heavy industry. 31.05 is the urban reserve industrial. The Urban Reserve Industrial has only three parcels to it. There's a 19 and two sixes. The rest of them, the rest of the area is already broken up into much smaller lots. Plus, you have residential use distributed throughout. That creates a real challenge when you want to look at an area and expand it with heavy industrial uses. So as you can see, there's emerging a real challenge about moving forward with these areas, and that is the point I wanted to make. And I'm sorry if I'm going back and forth. Now, here we are out at Clallam Bay, and the majority of this area is the Clallam Bay Correction Center. In fact, it's that you can see the black polygon around the majority of the purple area down there. It also includes a portion up to the north, which is their wastewater treatment facility to serve the prison. All the other area to the east is DNR, and the two polygons that include the black dotted overshadow, that is currently owned by two separate timber companies, one being Green Crow Timber, the other being the Ring Family Partnership. Again, both of those are in the timber tax classification, so there's a disincentive for bringing them out. So far, there's been no discussion about proposals for expanding industrial use out there. Furthermore, why would we? This area is significantly far away. Clallam Bay is not a deep port. There's no industry there at the shore itself. It seems to me that we would be better served by trying to focus our industrial efforts towards Port Angeles or SWIM, where urban services are available, and in the case of Port Angeles, where we do have a deep port facility. So in this, when you take out the split zone, we actually have 277.9 acres of industrial zone land out there, 20 acres of which is with Green Crow Timber, and just over 50 acres of which is with the Ring Family Partnership.
Excuse me, Bruce.
Yeah.
Just, I totally agree with your assessment of where the concentrated effort should be closer to services. But just out of curiosity, I mean, that DNR highlighted land on the bottom of the J hook there that's within the urban growth area. I mean, did Clallam Bay CQ have some aspirations for manufacturing development there at one time? I mean, why is it zoned M? And I think you said that's all DNR land, all forested currently, correct?
Yes, it is. And that's, I can't speak to that entirely. I know that there were certainly aspirations, and there has certainly been aspirations out there to explore the possibility of incorporation. But that has never come to fruition. There just isn't the revenue base and the economy of scale, if you will, to support a city creation. So I don't anticipate seeing anything like that anytime soon. And thank you. How's that? And this, of course, is a little misleading because the GIS folks that prepared this information took it off the parcel layer. The parcels were much bigger than the zoning actually encumbers. So again, 277.9 acres minus about 70 acres in the private sector. The majority of the area, a little over 200 acres, is within DNR and or taken up with Department of Corrections facility. So kind of misleading, you know, and having the prison out there probably doesn't seem like a likely location for future industrial expansion. And here we are in Carlsberg. This is the Carlsberg Industrial Park. It is the zoning that applies is Carlsberg Light Industrial. It doesn't really support heavy manufacturing, but out of the other industrial areas in Clallam County, it's actually pretty densely used. Currently, the vacant parcels are the ones that are shown in the light-colored dots. I'm just going to walk up just to point it out. Here, so you can see by this map that the majority, by and large, has already been developed. The industrial park has a total acreage of 76.4 acres, consists of 38 parcels that range anywhere from about 0.3 on up to 7.4 acres in area. Currently, there's 8 vacant lots totaling 15.03 acres that range anywhere from 1 to 5 acres in area. Not really a place that's going to see to our large family wage job industrial type development into the future, and yet it still serves a regional purpose and still needs to be supported, of course. The interesting thing about Carlsberg also is there is no centralized city affiliated with Carlsberg. It's strictly managed by the county. Service providers include the city of Sequim by contract for sewer service. The PUD obviously is provides the power and also for the majority of it provides water, and that continues to be an issue that I think we all want to partner on so that the urban growth area can continue to develop to its potential. But it's not because of those limitations, probably not the crowning jewel that will see to family wage jobs or give us a strong plan for future growth and expansion of industrial use. So out of that, the industrial park, there's 24 lots that are devoted to manufacturing or commercial use, totaling 50.71 acres. Again, if you add the resource lands, which there's 3 marijuana grow operations in there, it brings you up to that total. And the acreage range, of course, is 0.57 to 7.44 acres in area. So these are smaller scale manufacturing business type uses, nothing of regional significance except when you take it as a whole. This is the 156 acre parcel that's just north of the city of Forks. It's currently designated resource land. Again, in talking to the landowner, my understanding is they really don't have an interest of doing anything with the parcel in the near future. And that's the other piece of this puzzle, is that it's one thing to be able to create a map to say, well, this is industrial zone. With the underlying landowner doesn't choose to use it that way, you can't make them. So it requires not only finding adequate acreage, it requires finding people who are willing to be participants. Click. And this is the Pacific Aerospace and Electronics facility out at Miller Peninsula. As I pointed out, you know, you've got these 5-acre tracts to the south and west of this parcel. You have the Miller Peninsula State Park to the north and east. It is a facility that does some interesting metallurgy work where they use high-intensity ballistics to create new metal alloys. There's often some noise affiliated with it. But because of its location, the lack of urban facilities, this is not an area that we expect to see grow in the future. So it'll likely just be a continuation of the existing use until they decide to no longer do it. And I assume that zoning will likely go away. Click. Oh, and this is a 34.54 acre parcel. So in conclusion, even though we show some larger areas for industrial zone lands, when it gets down to it right now, there are about 98 industrial zone parcels in Clallam County totaling about 729 acres. total manufacturing and commercial activity exists on 46 of those lots, or on 177.5 acres. Vacant parcels in these areas that are adequate for future or new use, there's about 25 lots totaling 78.7 acres, which averages to 3.1 acres per parcel. So you can see that the current inventory is not adequate to meet the demand that was recently described, that Colleen just got through describing. We're going to need to grow. We're going to need to figure out, maybe even curtail some of those areas where it just doesn't seem to provide a kind of a rational basis for having an industrial zone in those areas, in favor of focusing on other areas that are closer to the city of Fort Angeles. This all has to be done in the context of the requirements of the Growth Management Act, which generally requires us to protect rural areas and allow the expansion of urban growth areas only upon demonstrated need, but more critically, to ensure that the facilities necessary to serve those areas get provided. That means working one-on-one with the cities, and it means partnering with the PUD on items like energy so that these areas can be served and we can do the job of creating ready-to-use larger acreage parcels that can see to our economic development into the future. So are there any questions?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. Maybe this first one's for both you and Colleen McAleer. You've given us a presentation of currently zoned land for the types of use we're talking about. Are there large parcels around the county in good locations that are not zoned for that, but that would be, if they were, would be good candidates for the kind of opportunities you're looking for?
Million-dollar question, and even if I had them in my hip pocket, I probably wouldn't raise them right now, just because there's a public process we have to go through, and part of that is to talk to those people to see if there's a willingness. Talk to the neighborhoods. Industrial zoning is a tough lift. Not too many people want to live next to it. But as we grow, as we continue to grow, it's only going to get harder. If we had it to do over again back in 1995 when we did our first round of comprehensive planning under the Growth Management Act, I think it would have been great if we could have seen larger industrial lands. And maybe the ideas of Clallam Bay CQ, the idea of the property down in Forks, made sense at that time. Right now, they don't seem to make sense. They didn't come to fruition. So we're having to take another look at it. And it may make me a one-term director, but it's something that we're going to have to do.
So I'm going to take that as a yes kind of an answer. Which leads to my second. Oh, go ahead.
I would say there's no perfect, like, oh, absolutely should be here. There's places that are better than others, but through the comprehensive plan update process, that is how the community participates and these ideas are investigated, which the comp plan will be up. What's your timeline for that?
We're obligated under the act to have an update to our comprehensive plan by July 1st of 2025. You know, I hope we do it well in advance of that because there's a lot of good things that can come out of that that I think the county needs. But we're going to be working hard over the next year and a half, 2 years to get that done, and industrial zoning is going to be part of it.
Well, my second question was to follow, and that is asking if the county has ever looked at or would consider form-based zoning versus fit-based, which is the most common use base, and fit-based is how it can be zoned. But there are many communities across the West that have developed and adopted form-based zoning, which allows basically almost anything to fit anywhere if it's done properly. And many communities have had excellent success with that. So I would encourage you to explore that as part of a comprehensive plan update. And that would require a lot of outreach, a lot of communication with the neighbors. But again, if you do some research on that, you'll find that there have been some communities, highly contentious communities with relation to, you know, quality of life and growth and development where they've adopted form-based zoning and stuff like that.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
I will just add one other thing here. I don't know if the other commissioners or staff have looked at the legislative bills that are being tracked by Laputa right now, but the first one on the list is reforming the State Building Code Council's operational procedures and its statutory authority. And the gist of that appears to me, with one quick reading, is to do a couple of things. One, include somebody from the public utility sector on the council, because I do believe the PUDs have an obligation to support growth and development. They are municipal corporations, and municipal corporations were founded in this country for growth and development in the West. And I think they also have a very strong focus on housing in many of the same ways that we've just heard here today. So something we might want to get on board with Laputa, show our own support and importance for our county here in that bill.
Thank you. So 2 points. One, that map that I showed showing the reserve capacity of the PUD lines, I think it's really important that that information is integrated into any comp plan update, because certainly it's much more expensive to build new lines rather than use the infrastructure that's already in the ground where there is reserve capacity. So I think that's one piece of the puzzle that needs to be considered. Additionally, I just would love to see some next steps with your staff and the technical experts at the county and the cities as they're looking at their comp plan updates, partnering to say what makes sense and what can we do that would help our economic situation across our county. So with that, I don't know if you had any parting last words. I'm going to introduce Jeff James, the executive director of the Port of Port Angeles. He didn't have any slides, but certainly is the economic driver for our county.
I actually elected not to use slides. I didn't want to put you to sleep. So I've been here at the Qualm County for about a year and a half. So hopefully I'm not teaching or saying anything here that's too earth-shattering, but at least from the port's perspective, I can kind of pass where we sit. And for driving economic development in the Thriller Port District. So I'll refer to some of the questions or at least some of the statements that Commissioner McAleer had alluded to on what my restrictions are, what I can and can't do, in particular up to the airport, and what I can do on the waterfront. But really myself and my staff, is our overall arching goal is to figure out how to get it done. And that's what really drives us and what's really within our restrictions. So we have received several requests, at least since I've been here, and this goes back to Commissioner McAleer's statement on the Department of Commerce typically will reach out on opportunities. We were able to bring one manufacturer over here over the last year. It's actually a boat producer, and they're producing higher boats this year, 200 next year, and 300 the following year. So this is a New Zealand company that's out here, and that's leveraging on some of the other stuff that we're looking. It's, you know, instead of just creating businesses here for, you know, build the opportunities for hopefully somebody will just show up, we're actually out there pursuing companies. That being the case, we're also looking at right now foreign trade zones being established throughout the Port District under our authority. That's specifically in Washington Code for Port Districts to formulate those within 60 miles from the port of arrival, so that would actually even cover out into Jefferson County if necessary. We also look at not just the market value, but also the proximity. And really what we're going to look at, even though you have the five major industrial zones that are out throughout our port district, really the one that's going to carry the most from the industrial is going to be around Port Angeles. And that's really because we don't have rail, but we do have international air flights, and we also have a deep water port. So that will drive the bulk of it. And you'll see that Historically with the port, they had focused on a timber. We are diversifying the Marine Trade Center. We'll design will go in next year, and then we start shovels in the ground the following year and stuff. And so those, that keeps it in line with the maritime industry. Those are industrial jobs. Those are high family wage paying jobs, and that's where we keep our focus to generate those type of businesses into our community. Exactly what Commissioner McAleer had talked about is contiguous acres. I have plenty of lots in various places. I know there's plenty of lots throughout the county. But we're looking at companies that are coming in. If we're going to entice a large company for the shock factor, it's about 20, 30, to 40 acres at a piece. The latest one that we did have come through wanted 40 acres. I could only provide 25 of that to an adjacent property. But due to my timelines, and I'll talk a little bit further about the airport, on some of my restrictions, what I can and can't do in there, is that that deal pretty much fell apart, and we went down to Mason County to set up business. So let me just jump on the airport so people kind of understand, well, you know, why don't you sell property? Why don't you give it the dirt rate price? So the airport really has to run in black. Pretty much designated from the FAA. That's not Jeff James. That's not a port commissioner designated. It has to operate. It has to be self-sustaining. The industrial park has to support that. So I have aviation and non-aviation type uses. Everything that's non-aviation has to be at the prevailing rate. So, you know, we have a little flexibility, but not much that's actually in there. We can't sell land. All that was because when that was deeded over to the port back in the 50s, that's what the piece was. We're receiving grants, so we're intending on trying to resurface the runway in excess of $6.5 million. Based upon that, we have to maintain all the rules that the FAA puts out, and that would be over, you know, approximately over about an 8-year period, in excess of $50.5 million in grants. And they hold our feet to the fire on that, so it's kind of like we don't. Basically, you know, ruffle the feathers to the guy that stroked the check for grants for us. And so we're looking at, especially in industrial park out in development, we're going to work with the brokerage services to start bringing I-5 businesses into Port Angeles. Expansion with the free trade zone would allow them to do warehousing and manufacturing here in Port Angeles. And let's see, did I miss anything, Commissioner McAleer? I'll make sure.
Yes. Interested in outside city limits as well.
Yes. So what we're looking at, anything that's going to be close to a deepwater port, if it needs that type of infrastructure. But what we need is to understand when they come to us and they ask this question about high power, any of the other utilities, if they need industrial water, industrial stormwater, how do we kind of work around that? If the port's going to purchase under a grant and go in and develop the property, either at that point it's off the port, off the airport property, then we can resell those or go back into a lease to entice them back out there. But for us to do that, we need to make sure we have those type of industrial, you know, utilities available. So hopefully that's really no earth-shattering thing for the audience and commissioners. I don't think that was really – you know, anything new that you didn't know, but I just wanted to make sure that you understood where we come from the port. We have probably like 5 or 6 items juggling right now, but we'll see how they fall out and make an announcement for me too on those. So, thanks.
Okay, thanks. Does that conclude our discussion feedback at this point from commissioners? Presentation.
Colleen did make a request in her presentation. I don't know if the commissioners want to entertain that.
No, I would like to see. I don't think I've ever seen a copy of the PUD EDC contract that's provided. Agreement.
Try to send the commissioners.
Then maybe we can revisit it at a subsequent meeting.
Do that with
So, okay. Let me make sure I lost the thought on what we were just saying. On with an EDC, do we need to resolve anything at this meeting, or is
no? She made a formal request to increase the amount that the PD contributes to $25,000. Right now, we're approved to contribute $5,000.
So, do we want to discuss what we want?
I think Commissioner Hayes is saying he'd like to see the contract first. Is that
okay?
All right. What you're saying?
Yeah,
I guess know more about what. I mean, normally, if you contribute to an entity like that, there has to be a contract.
Yeah, there's deliverables.
What our benefit?
Yeah. It outlines the deliverables for me.
I'd like to.
Okay, then we can defer that just until the next meeting. And then T, you just gave me.
Hopefully next month sometime.
Where the rest of these? I go that way?
Yeah.
Okay, next business item is BPA post 2028 contract discussion, commissioners and staff.
I have one thing on that.
Okay, good.
We received the record decision from the administrator on the power reserve distribution clause. And it was approved per the November 16th staff recommendation. So the RDC is $500 million, and 70% will go towards a dividend to Public Power of $350 million. 20% or $100 million goes to debt reduction, and then the 10% goes to an accelerated one-time needs for existing fish and wildlife mitigation costs. So we received that over the weekend. I received that actually, and so there are no changes from what was originally proposed.
Okay, that's not exactly the 2028 contract discussion, but fine. What do we do with that now? Is our process is now that we've received this is to do what
we don't have to do anything. Our original rate reduction this year was predicated on this being approved, and just letting you know that it's formally approved.
Okay. All right.
I'd like to make a comment about that. I'm not sure it's any future discussion, but you know, I found it curious that we would take windfall revenue and apply it to permanent costs. I don't think it's very plausible. It seems like the windfall funding could have been a couple of different ways to bank it and use it to offset escalating costs on rates. We know the rates are going to go up. If we discount the rates over the next couple of years, the increase after that period is dramatic. And so banking it, using it to offset that might be a better use
projects can be used to help bolster energy efficiency measures, especially for those at risk and at the lowest income range. So I don't know if any of those ideas were discussed or whether it was just decided sort of across the board to use it to reduce rates in the short term. But that's just my thoughts on it.
Well, yeah, and I guess the bottom line is, what does it look like when we apply those numbers to our PUD? What changes here, what changes there in this column and so forth? And I guess that's not what I'm sure I was thinking, how we're applying those
numbers. Yeah, it was all in the budget that Ruth presented in October. And was brought to you for final approval in November.
So nothing's changed since October.
Yeah, and those numbers assume that the RDC would go through.
Okay. I thought they did a later RDC discussion at BPA in November timeframe or something. But maybe.
No, it's always been $500 million since it was brought up.
All right. Well, in terms of 2028 contracts, I haven't had anything in the last 2 weeks really talk about on that. You guys have anything?
Just that I think it'd be helpful for me to have a special work session, a special meeting with times discussing post 2028 contract, the current contract, the structure of the contract, the benefits, the pluses and minuses of long term. I know Commissioner Pascal comes from the BPA industry.
I worked there for 5 years.
I mean, I always find it really helpful to get his insights, inside operation of BPA. You know, they face challenges as well as opportunities, and so on. That's all I would say is it would be helpful going forward. It's a big decision for us.
So that can be part of an overall workshop that we discussed a minute ago, is to bring that in and then have a public engagement with that.
Yeah, it's a workshop.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any correspondence and communications?
Yeah, I have two things. So APPA just sent out their most recent periodical, and in it on the front page here, they have their congratulations for all the 2022 Smart Energy Provider designees. And we were one of 31 who achieved that status out of 1,400 utilities across the country. And they say, we salute your commitment to prioritizing energy efficiency, distributed generation, renewable energy, and environmental initiatives as you provide affordable and reliable electric service to your communities. So just wanted to point that out, that we achieved that designation again. And I appreciate staff's work on going through the application process and making sure that we maintained our designation in that category.
That's good. Just thank you for putting on those additional sweaters and jackets, you know, to keep your thermostats down, because I know that's what you did.
Yeah. The other one is we have been getting reports from law enforcement of further escalations around the country at substations, and we've even received correspondence from a few customers that share the concern about bad actors taking high-powered rifles to transformers, throwing chains over the bus bar at substations, et cetera. They did catch the perpetrators down in Tacoma that vandalized 5 of the substations down there on Christmas Day. We are taking it seriously, and we can't divulge publicly what protective measures that we're taking at our substations, but we are in contact with the FBI as well as local law enforcement who are patrolling our substations more vigorously and are going to report any suspicious activity that they come across. But it is on our radar, and we are taking preventative measures to mitigate any vandalism that we can.
Okay, good. You need to we're going to have more public comments if you want to wait. Do you have a question? Okay.
And that's all I had.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner reports, I don't have anything to add since I've been kind of quiet the last 2 weeks.
I don't have a report per se. I mentioned briefly the
state legislature bill status report that I think it came through an email yesterday from Waputa, and I find that stuff fascinating, interesting. I've looked at most of them. So my question, and I guess a recommendation, the question is, does RPUD generally review these and send any kind of communication to Waputa that we are in agreement or disagreement with what they support or have concerns about? I mean, I think we should, I guess.
Yeah, at the board meetings for Waputa, they get input from all the utilities.
Okay. And then just specific, I mentioned one, Senate Bill 5117 is the one where they're talking about making amendments to the Code Council structure, which I think we should support, and PUD and Waputa does support. I found it interesting, a couple that they have concerns about, one in particular, creating a public works assistance revolving account. They are, I don't know what their concerns are. I haven't actually looked at their Waputa's summary on these yet. I will get to that, but it seems like that's much to our benefit here in Clark County. Access to the revolving account for public works funding, especially for grants. So anyway, it might be something we want to have a discussion about in the next week or so, since the legislature is in session.
Okay, so given the timing of this legislative stuff, do we want to try to do something quickly here to go through some of these legislative initiatives, or is it?
I just received that. I haven't gone through it myself. And Ken's right. They do have a summary on each one where we'll put a case of stance.
Right. Yeah.
Initial
stance. I started reading those too.
Yeah. I haven't looked at them yet, to be honest.
Some of these are just going into hearings. It's a lengthy process, so we'll have to kind of track the schedule. We may have opportunity to comment. We may not. Seems like it's worthwhile for us to make sure our voice is
heard. Yeah, and a lot of that stuff gets talked about as that legislation is being developed by the Waputa staff in the Waputa meetings, and so you get to see a cycle evolution of some of these things, and so most of them don't come up as a surprise. We kind of know what's going on. Waputa is telling us, you know, what they believe is good or bad, but sometimes we don't agree with their assessment.
Well, I think that's important to know where we do agree and where we don't.
Right.
So.
Okay. Staff reports? Or
I think I have a commissioner report.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mr. DeButzman and others, one of the problems I haven't been able to figure out about batteries is I've always tried to practice keeping my impact as close to my home as possible because it just kind of feels right. If you start putting batteries in, as you can imagine, there's a huge, huge demand for the raw materials, or raw earth, I think they're called, that go into batteries with respect to cars, utility-sized batteries. So, and I'm not saying that I know how to think about it because I don't. And the problem is that if we start putting in, and it's going to happen, lots of batteries, it kind of feels to me like what you're doing is you're taking your environmental impact and you're shipping it somewhere else. And like I said, I'm not against batteries, but there's something about that that doesn't feel right to me. It feels to me that you should try to keep your environmental impacts for the things that you're doing, turning lights on, keeping your house warm, should keep that close to home rather than shipping it off somewhere else. Like I said, I'm not opposed to batteries. It's just that's a conundrum that I haven't quite figured out in my own mind how to think about. And I don't know what the right answer is. I'm just sharing with you a concern that I have. And I don't have the answer to it, but if you think about it and you think that, you know, you have some thoughts on it, I would certainly, enjoy hearing what you have to say. The other point I wanted to bring up was substations, vandalism, and earthquakes. I read a study that was talking about that if we try to harden our substations to the point that vandals can't get to them, and earthquakes can't impact them, that the price of electricity would be unaffordable. I don't know. I would like to ask staff that maybe in some of the future meetings to have some presentations on substations and how we could potentially protect them. Are there some substations that are higher priority that we may want to look at doing extra security for them? I must admit, I speaking of not knowing how to think about something, I didn't know how to think about someone driving up to a substation with a gun and shooting it. I don't understand what motivates someone to do something like that. I don't get it. And trying to harden the substations, that to me, it feels to me like if someone wants to do some damage to the electrical lines, that, you know, if we harden the substations, the next thing we know, they'll start burning, utility poles down. So where do you draw the line? I don't know. There are times when I watch the evening news and I wonder if I'm, still in America, because some of the things that people are doing, they don't make sense to me, and it seems self-defeating. But I don't really have a aim at this other than to request or see if there's another commissioner that would like to support having the staff give us some presentations in the future about substations and what we might be able to do to help secure them, because it sure seems like they're getting targets painted on them, and I don't understand why. That's all I had.
And Rick, from both hardening substations for earthquake as well as vandalism, there's some pretty well established standards for earthquakes, seismic standards based on California. With respect to vandalism or sabotage, I think in the near term, we probably don't want to go into extensive details as to what we're doing now, but we would be available for any commissioner who has any question to sit down and we can communicate it that way. Might be the best thing, at least for the next 2 or 3 months.
Well, I understand not talking about any of the security issues.
So the actual full-blown presentation on vandalism and what we're doing, probably a few months away.
Well, and maybe the earthquake. I read an article talking about earthquakes and how you can protect the substations, and I must admit it was a head scratcher for me, because my gut tells me that that transmission, big transmission lines, will go down probably a lot sooner than some of the substation issues. But I don't know if that's true or not.
You know too much.
So okay, we can put that on the docket of things to circle back on and do some follow up work. All right, there's Mark. I guess now staff reports.
No staff reports today.
No staff reports. Board actions for the staff. Jim, what do we got?
We have. Staff is looking to provide an educational work session for the public on the contract. We are going to be revising the current organizational membership list to accept any delegates to the Peninsula Building Association and to energy and contractors that you say. Commissioner Hayes requested that we provide another community agency contract for review to discuss an upcoming with an agenda item. And staff has been asked to make yourself available, John, to answer any questions about potential substation security concerns.
Okay. One thing that comes to mind, and this is not about this meeting, but action items. You know, you do a good job of identifying the ones, you know, in the minutes, but it might be good if we had a quick somehow, what happened, you know, was that action item accomplished, you know, was there a paper written or a phone call made or whatever. In other words, can we close the loop on some of these things? Because right. I know there's plenty in my head that I sometimes think about in the middle of the night. Like, whatever happened to that comment somebody made that we were going to work on? And so it's just a procedural issue. I might suggest that we have an action item follow-up or something like that.
We can put something in the board pack if there's outlines there.
Yeah, I think that would be helpful.
Okay.
All right. Then next item is any more comments from the public? Richard.
Commissioner Pascal, I greatly appreciate your speaking out and enjoy discussing batteries. It's a freight train coming, and we're going to have to deal with this, whether we like to or not. But let's discuss that later. So on the campaign trail, I encountered a couple of significant things, and I'm sorry that our guests are not here to speak to. But people are coming here. I encountered multiple people that said, we're moving to SWIM from California, from Seattle, or whoever, because of the rural environment. But we need high-speed internet. If our other friends are coming here because of the attributes we have here, we need broadband, because we're still working from here. We're working for companies wherever. So I'm a little concerned about industrial development, because that's not what they're looking for. Right? Next issue, quickly. I encountered a lot of people who can't pay their PUD bills. Down in the middle of SWIM, in what I call energy slums, people said, we can't pay. And I would say, what about the program PUD already has in helping? They ran out. And so come January, there I was. So this needs to be addressed. I don't know how valid this is. But I heard it not only from those energy slums downtown, but I heard out here in the rural areas as well that people are really concerned about how do I pay my bill. So I think we need to deal with that and take a good look at it. Thanks for the
thanks for your comment, Richard.
Yeah, indeed.
Any other comments?
John Conrad, can you hear me? about the batteries being close by, or you know, about having your energy source close to your home?
No, I'm talking about the environmental impact of what if it's a battery or a hydro or whatever. Batteries, the material come from far away, so all the environmental impacts are there, okay. Not here.
So you're not talking about the power itself.
Power stuff.
But power itself.
No. Well, no. Yes. I am talking about, you know, the majority of the electricity that we consume comes from hydro that's in the region. You know, and so the environmental impact is here. Batteries, the materials for batteries come from either deserts or somewhere other than the Pacific Northwest. So the environmental impacts of the batteries are somewhere else that we bring here for our enjoyment.
Well, that sounds like a workshop topic of a discussion because, you know, the way I look at it, we are living in an area which is vulnerable to our power being cut off, and that the best strategy we could have is having the most options possible to help supply that if that happens. And batteries are a key part of it.
They are. And you're okay with the environmental impacts being somewhere else?
I, I'm not sure that they're comparable.
Well, maybe not.
Well, I mean, that's why I said it needs to be discussed at the workshop.
Yeah, that's where I think we need to lay this out with some background work from the staff and kind of look at these things, because obviously it's a problem, you know, environmental impacts on anything, particularly battery. Well, I won't say particularly batteries, but, you know, there's plenty of laws by EPA and others about how you can develop these resources and what you've got to do with the refuse or the product after it's dealt with. So I know there's a lot of work going on. It's just, you know, not the kind of stuff that we have on our fingertips normally here at a PUD about each of these resources, but we certainly can bring it into this discussion about, you know, renewables and, you know, and what gets used and what are the trade-offs.
Mm-hmm.
Are we guilty of, you know, some, you know, externalizing environmental consequences?
Yeah. You know, and usually hydro is left out of that discussion. Hydro produces methane. Hydro produces methane gas. You can shake your head all you want.
I have read the paper about it. That paper happened in where it was very warm and there was lots of vegetation in the water. Then we don't have that conditions up here.
Anytime you bury organic matter without oxygen, you produce methane.
Into a technical debate that's got various different angles to it that I suggest we say.
Okay, and just one other comment about the substations. Did you see what the motive for those substations?
The what?
The substations.
The modem?
The motive. Motives. Why that happened?
No.
The two guys
wanted
to burglarize a house and they wanted to shut off their power. That's just one data.
I mean, you know, at the end of the day, what is motivating someone to shoot out a substation, you know, that doesn't bring the power back on? You know, I did read that they were robbers and they were hoping to cut the electricity off so the alarms wouldn't go off.
Right.
But, you know, if they were motivated by because they didn't believe in electricity or, you know, at some point, you know, it's like the motivation isn't that important. It's the result that is.
Yeah. And you also have to consider it may or may not be true, what I just said, about their motivation. That's what they said the motivation was. Who knows?
Oh, right.
Okay. Okay.
I would like to ask for the PowerPoint presentation from the EDC to be put online. It wasn't part of our packet, and I'd like to have it online. And another thing is I asked for them to explicitly define, give us an explicit definition of affordable housing. Because commensurate with economics, with local level of income and someone's checkbook, affordable housing can have a sliding scale. And if we are going to start shoehorning in industrial-sized family supporting homes, that affordable housing is going to change. We live in a community filled with retired people who are bringing lots of disposable income to this community, and I wonder why they are never, this me, I'm one of those people, that why that community is never considered for any kind of development, community development that is beyond, I'm talking about us active, not a 55 plus because we need hospital care all the time, but a 55 plus because we're active people. And we can also still participate in our environment and all of the beauty that comes here on the peninsula, which is exactly why, what Richard said, is exactly why people move here from California. I'm one. And I used to live in, I still live in Carlsbad, and I want to make one last comment about the cannabis growing facility over there. I miss it. I moved a couple blocks away. So when they burn it during the afternoon, you just go out and breathe deep, and it's wonderful. You know, you're back in California.
Okay, thank you, Christine. Any other comments? Okay, if there are no further comments, then this meeting is adjourned.